Welcome to another edition of Shabbat Torah Study. And, of course, James and I are setting in for Yada. How you doing tonight, James?
Yeah, a little sore from work, but otherwise I'm doing good.
Oh, yeah? What's going on?
We just replaced our entire phone system for the entire district. So today we spent going around classroom to classroom, physically replacing the old phones with new ones. So
is that what you're into, IT? Monotonous. Is that what you do?
Yeah. Yeah, I work IT for a school district.
Yeah, it makes sense. Wow. Yeah, that makes for a long day, no doubt about it.
Yeah, very monotonous. But thankfully, I was able to download the Shattering Myths shows from yesterday and today and listen to them. So.
And well, how did you like them? I really enjoyed the one today a lot.
I didn't get to listen to all of today's yet. I only caught the first like half hour, but yesterday's was really good.
Well, good, good. The one thing that I lack, you know, that so many lack is, you know, I just can't get into the depth that Yada can, you know, because he kind of, although he's always downplaying his, you know, his abilities and his brains, he's got to be the smartest guy I ever knew. And I've known a few. Yeah.
He definitely understands the Torah better than most anybody I know.
Well, there's a straightforward thinking process that he does, and certainly in the Torah it works. It works in business. It works in everything he does. But there's no question about it. His understanding of the Torah probably exceeds anybody else in the country or maybe the world, I think. Certainly the work he's provided does. And, you know, I'm thankful that he's done that, you know, and gotten us to the point where we can see words in extant form. It's kind of interesting, too, because, you know, when we look at the words that Yahweh wrote in extant form, you know, they all sound the same. You know what I mean? They sound the same, whether it's Hosha writing them or whether it's Zachariah writing them.
Yermayah.
It doesn't matter who it is. And even the style of writing. It all sounds like it comes from one writer, which it does, you know.
And different pens,
and then
but
you
one
get,
author.
Yeah, exactly, you know. They're just the pen. That's why it's kind of amusing, you know, when you get people that are standing there, you know, the Paulettes or the Paulbots, as they're called, whatever. You know, they're tap dancing for Paulos, he who is lowly and little. You know, they're dancing on words that don't sound like they came from Yahweh. I mean, not to mention that they're in direct opposition. It's just the way they're written. They're horrible.
Yeah, well, that's like the whole of the Greek text.
It is the whole of the Greek text, but yeah, I know. It's just awful. You know, when I see Zachariah write, you know, we don't know a lot about Zachariah. At least I don't, and I love his work, you know, and I read it over and over and over, and I got to say that, you know, he says, you know, here I am, it's the eighth month of the second year of King Darius of Persia, and the words of Yahweh came to me, and here we go. Boom! We're off to the race.
We're not told a lot about who Zachariah was, what he did, what his interests were. You know, it's just, you know, this is when I lived, here's what God told me to say.
Yeah, and that's what prophets did. You know, they didn't spend a lot of time. Yeah, they got out of the way of the words. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to start tonight. If it's okay, we're just going to let Yada come back before we get back into the Mizmor of the Psalms. And I'm going to start out with some real basic stuff like Yahusha, what it means, and who he is, if that sounds okay to you.
That works for me.
Okay. Well, you know, in the word picture or masal, what's called Proverbs today, Yahweh, you know, asks, who is it that comes on the scene and stands upright, enables others to stand, establishing all the earth without ceasing? What is his personal and proper name? What is his son's personal and proper name? Surely you know and understand. Well, Yeah.
We put that verse on every church in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't hurt their case, would it? You know, I mean, of course, they might have an empty building by the time it was all said and done, and then whoever's standing there running the circus, making a living, wouldn't have a job anymore. Because Yahusha means Yahweh saves. It's just like Yasha Yah, the guy they call Isaiah, means salvation is from Yahweh. Yasha is the Paleo-Hebrew word for saves or salvation. And it's appropriate to know who it is that's doing the saving. And it says right there, it's not just should we understand the relationship there of the name and who Yahusha is. He says, who comes onto the scene, stands upright, enabling others to stand, establishing all the earth without ceasing. What is his personal and proper name? Well, that's Yahweh. So he's the one doing it. What is his son's personal and proper name? Yahusha, meaning Yahweh saves. And how does he really describe Yahusha? Well, he says, he's a diminished part of me. On behalf of you existing as my servant to stand up for and establish restoring the tribes of Jacob and to change, restore, and preserve Yisrael. I will give you as a gift to provide light to the Gentiles existing as I am, Yahusha, to the distant limits of the land, earth, world, and space, says Yahweh, Redeemer of Yisrael, the set-apart one. So, if anybody's saying that Yahusha, and we see this in the messiantics, I like to call them mantics, I don't know about you, how many debates you've had with them, but they're out there changing the name to Yeshua and every other thing. And, you know, love of the name is part of being in the family. You know, we know that because Yahweh tells us that. And he tells us, he shares the name 7,000 times directly in covenant writings. And then in addition to that, we've got him sharing the name. And, what, you can think of some names, can't you? Quadya, Paulya, Zachariah. Yasha, wait, he probably shares the name another 10,000 times just in names.
Yeah, which, just the Yah form of the name.
Just, yeah, well, yeah, then you got Yoab, and you got, there's all this other stuff, you know, that are contractions of Yahweh's names, all these other names. And it's kind of astonishing that people don't understand that. From the spiritual realm, although Yahweh I hate to say spiritual being because I wouldn't even say that because he created the spiritual realm. He is a being of pure energy that created both the spiritual realm and the physical realm essentially at the same time. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. The heavens and the earth. Heavens is plural, as in heaven and the skies and, you know, space, but heaven as in the spiritual realm as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's even beyond a spiritual being. Although he commands the spiritual realm, he was before it. You know, we can look at the Mizmor 88:1, and it says, Yahweh Elohim Yahusha. And then Jonas says, Yahusha is from Yahweh. And if we look even at the witness writings from Yohanan, according to Yohanan, Yahusha said, my Father who has given them to me is greater than all, and I and my Father are one. And that's in Yohanan 10:29-30. And then he refined it later in Yohanan 14:28 when he said, the Father is greater in dimensions, mass, power, and structure than I. Because that's what megas means. in Greek. So, you know, they're one and the same. They are really one and the same. Behold, Yahweh's day of return and restoration is coming. That's in Zechariah 14:1. Now, he's called Yahweh, right? And yet, if we look at Malachi, it says the Son of Man will return then, doesn't it? So we've got the Son of Man, we've got Yahusha, and we've got Yahweh. He's called all three. And the reason that Yahweh can be called all three is because he's the greater part. And these parts that come out and have a physical manifestation or even a spiritual manifestation as the Ruach are all parts of Yahweh. They're set apart. And last time I checked, if something is set apart, it has to be set apart from something. And in this case, it's Yahweh, right?
Yeah. That's what set apart means, is to be a part of it. While we got a break here, or a good starting point, we have Diane on the line who had a question for you.
Diane, well, you're going to ask this to James, Diane. Go ahead.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing?
Hi. I'm doing good. How are you, Diane?
I'm good. So, since you're talking about the name Yahweh and Yeshua, so... And I've heard you mention the book of Yasha before yourself. Have you, what about Yasharon? Do you know anything about that? Do you have a...
I really don't. James might. Do you know anything about it?
That's not a name
the
I've ever heard.
The book of Yasher.
Yasharon. Well, I can look it up real quick, see if I can find a name, find anything out about it. Don't off the top of my head, though.
Well, go ahead, Diane. What's the point,
well,
though? Go ahead.
I was listening to another program, and they were talking about Sarah. And they said Sarah was the root word for Yasharon, which Sarah means upright one. So I was just wondering if you had any... had you ever done any research on that yourself, or is that just...
No, I really haven't myself. Sarah, what I'm thinking of, the only thing I can think of close to that's Sarah, you know,
yeah.
Which is obviously the, you know, the what makes Yisrael the feminine noun that it is, Sarah's name right there in the middle, one who strives with the upright one. To strive, I don't know Sarah. I really don't, and it's not a book I know much about.
Oh, okay. Well, I just was that just came to my mind, and I know you were talking about Yah's name and how Yeshua has his name in it, and Yahweh's name, and so in
Yeshua. Yeah, it's not really Yeshua. It's really written Yahusha, because it's. Yeah, it's written as Yahweh saves. In fact, it's if you think of Yashayah or Isaiah, okay, Yashayah, it's just the reverse of that. It's Yahusha instead of Yasha, the Shah. Shua means cry out. It's written as Yahshua twice in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and I think 212 times it's written as Yahusha, which is that's how it's written. It's kind of strange that, you know, people have such a hard time with that, and I think the reason is because of you get the Messianics, and the Messianics have a tendency to use Aramaic, which is really a corrupted form of Hebrew. It was the Babylonian language of commerce is what it was. And it came even after Babylonian Hebrew. But the way it's actually written is Yod-Heh. So how they get Yesh out of Yod-Heh, that's Yah. And then Wah, which is Yao, now we're at. And then it's Shin-An. So the way it would look would be a hand, a person standing, you know, an increase as in a tent peg, a tooth and an eye. you know. So it's Yahusha is actually how that's done.
Hey,
strange,
if you, and Yada talked about the tooth in the eye, and I had a friend here that was we talked about a little bit. If some time, and I know you probably got a little program because it's you're setting in the Yada, but if during the hour you have a able to reiterate the tooth in the eye, that would be great for me.
Well, you know, it wasn't me that brought that up. I think it was, I think it may have been Chuck or Fred. Who was it that called in on the show, James? Do you remember that?
That was actually from an email. I can't remember who the email was from, though. It's on the
But they were talking about an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth?
Tooth, yeah. And that Yahusha was the eye and the mouth of God on earth.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, the physical manifestation of. And that's what kind of it throws so many people off because, you know, you get into Messianic Judaism and, you know, they've got, they'll call him Yeshua. They'll take the Yah right out of the name, same way they do in Ma-Siyah. Instead of saying Ma-Siyah, they'll say Ha-Ma-Siyah. And Ha-Ma-Siyah is, you know, the Masayak is never written. There were many Masayaks. Masayak just means like a leader, you know, kind of a strong bull of a tribe.
Every instance.
Yeah, and Masayah, there's only one Masayah. There's only one implement that does the work of Yahweh, and that's Yahusha.
Mm-hmm.
But
so
part
the,
of the...
Is, kind of, I'm part.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
So the Wah is... inevitably an O is what it is.
Yeah.
Well, see, if it isn't, then we've got Torah wrong. You know what goyim are, right? Gentiles, goyim. They would become gum, right? Moed would become, think about it, Moed would become mud. The mud mikra, you know. And it's
or
kind of a strange thing.
Like they do in modern Hebrew. So
yeah,
have,
oh yeah, that's
moved,
another thing.
Moved.
Yeah, the moved mikra. not just that. I mean, you know, it would be a particularly rough language. Can you imagine talking about Mount Moriah? Mount Moriah. You know, you got them to go ye and yay and all this stuff. They do that through a system. It's called Shoa. Or today they call it Shav. But do you know what Shoah or Shav means, Diane?
No, I don't, Larry.
It means corruption. It means deceitful and that which is damning. You know, so when the rabbis came up with their vowel pointing system, they literally named it corruption.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's astounding, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, well, that was honest. That's pretty astounding that they
did
it.
That's up there with, you know, Paul and Muhammad admitting to being demon-possessed. That is literally the devil laughing and going, look how stupid these people are.
Yeah, in your face. In your face. Yeah. It's very in your face. Yeah.
Well, I had,
go ahead.
I'd read one, and when Caleb and them, I read so much stuff and trying to keep it all, you know, intact and everything is in my process. But so anyway, when they came out of the wilderness and they were going to go into the promised land, so Caleb was there. He was from a clan, and so Caleb's clan people, not Caleb, but part of his clan, wanted to become part of the scribes, and so they maneuvered themselves to put themselves in that position as scribes. And I think probably maybe at that time a lot of that got changed as far as back as then. I mean,
well, corruption and manipulation, you know, and political people and religious people wanting power and money and so forth is certainly, you know, been around forever. You know, but I do know one thing. I know that Yahweh's words are going to trump any man's words. And one of the things in Malachi 2:5 that Yahweh says about Yahusha, he says that my familial covenant relationship exists with him life and salvation, I give them reverently and respectfully. He reveres and respects me on account of the presence of my name. He is awesome and astounding. Now, can you imagine taking Yahusha and pulling the Yah out and putting Yesh in there? Yeah, what you said, on account of the presence of my name, he is awesome and astonishing. And since it was written, Yad He Wah Shin Ayin, Yad He Wah is the same way Yahweh's name starts, right? Yad He Wah.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that's different is a shin and an ayin, and suddenly that becomes Yeshua. And you know, he talks about you know, the rabbis hating his name and wanting to get rid of his name and doing everything they can to hide his name. And guess what? Just like everything else he says, that was exactly right.
Yeah.
Whether they hit it in titles like Ma'asiyah or the name Yahusha or replacing you know, the upright one with my Lord Adonai, which now is Adoniah, but my Lord, it's the same thing, and then never speaking Yahweh's name. I mean, talk about the ultimate disrespect. You know, what I know is that not only did he share the name 7,000 times, but he shared it in so many other ways, you know, by whether it was contractions and names and other things. And each time we look at it, we can see that that Wah is an O. It's like a signpost. You know, it's there in all those names that contain his name, like Yoab, like Yonah. You know, those are this Yonah. That's the same Wah, you know. So it's hard to imagine that they were able to, you know, it's hard to imagine why they were able to hide the name when it's out there in front for so many of us to see.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't you noticed that, James? I mean, it's all over the place.
Oh, yeah. If you're looking, it's there. You can't miss it unless you're willingly blind.
Did you happen to find anything on Yasharon, James, while you were looking?
Yes, I actually did. I was able to find it. It's actually only used one time that I could find in the Tanakh, which is in 2 Samuel. It's spelled Yod Shin Resh, so Yah's name is not a part of it. And all of its definitions, looking through at various pointings they use, it all comes down to being upright, straight, following the straight path, doing right. Yeah, it's basically...
And that would fall in line with saves or salvation, upright. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yasharon, that would make sense.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of...
reference in 2 Samuel... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yes?
I was going to say, the reference in 2 Samuel refers to what is often referred to as the Book of Yasher, or Josher, if you read it in most languages. But it actually isn't used as a proper noun there. It's not a name in this case. It should be translated, not transliterated, and it should be the Book of the Upright.
Yeah, so it's a title, or not a name, but a description.
Yeah.
Is that what you'd say? Yeah.
Which I imagine the Torah would be considered the Book of the Upright.
Yeah.
It's clearly a good word. What was the study that you were looking at, Diane, that led you to ask that question? What were you studying?
Oh, it was relating Yisrael to Yasharon, and how the Yasharon has Yasharon has Yah's name in it, and Yeshua, just from the description, if it's the description of the word that it described Yahusha, because he was upright, so I was just following along with that article. I don't know, it resonated with me and how they were presenting the name, and instead of Yisrael, I have a hard time with pronouncing those, but anyway, So they were comparing.
What's more important, you know what they mean. Yeshua, I mean, that's your individual, Sarah, the one who strives, and then El, the mighty one, the one who strives with the mighty one, right?
Yeah.
So
in this article, they were talking about how it doesn't have his name in it, and everything has his name in it. So his people would be called Yasharon because it means upright and well-pleasing. But Yisrael didn't have his name in it. And I've kind of wondered that. I mean, when I understand what Yisrael means. I understand that. But I don't understand why he doesn't call his people by his name, because that is not his name. It's a action. Those
his name is Yahweh, and so they were called Yehudi as well. Yehudi, Yehudim.
Yeah.
Their name comes from the fact that they're descendants of, the Yisraelites are descendants of Yisrael, who was the son of... I hate when I draw a blank on the name.
When they changed Jacob's name?
Yaakov, of course.
Yisrael, after striving with God.
Exactly.
It was a name given to them. So their name, they're called by that because they're his descendants.
Yeah.
But he does, they are referred to as Yehudim as well.
Yeah. And that's what that discussion was about, but it was saying that even when they changed Jacob's name, it didn't change it to Israel. It was really changed to Yasharon, because when he was fighting
with the messenger.
No, they're
wrong, because it's in the Dead Sea Scrolls. We can look right at it.
Well,
why would they say that Jacob wasn't changed to Yisrael? Because he was. It's all over. If you only see a word once, and then you see another word, literally hundreds of times, it's pretty obvious that it was there, and it's in the DSS. It's in the Dead Sea Scrolls that way.
Well, and after Yah changed his name to Yisrael, he explained why he changed his name to it. And the Yasharon wouldn't fit the definition of why God changed his name to it, because God said, your name shall be Yisrael because you have strived with and endured with me.
I see.
Right.
Okay.
Yasharon doesn't mean... strive with and endure with God.
There are, Diane, one of the things that I see, I've seen a lot of people, one of the things that's similar that reminds me of this is, you get people looking for a deeper secret, than there is. One of the best statements that God has ever made is that, Yahweh's a pretty good communicator. imagine that.
Yeah.
Now, you wouldn't think so based on all the copy edits we see. And I understand why people get to a point where they think absolutely everything's a ripoff. Everything's been copy edited. But it's not true. Everything has not been copy edited. Some things have been, some things have not been. But you remember when he first ran into Mose, when he first introduced himself to Mose, I should say, Mose said, well, what's your name? And Yahweh said, I am. I am. I exist. What he was really saying, at that stage of the game was, hey, I'm real, as opposed to Amun-Ra down there and the rest of these phony, made-up, man-made gods, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm the real deal.
And then... yeah, but you will run into people today that will say, oh, no, it says right here, God said his name was I Am.
Yeah, those are the people who like to take things out of context. Don't bother to read the very next verse.
Very next part, is pretty important, because at that point, at that stage of the game, Yahweh says, I am Yahweh. This is my name. Go tell, again, the children of Yisrael, he says, go tell them that my name is Yahweh. I'm the God of Jacob. I'm the God of Abraham. I am the God of, all your fathers. This is my name, my renown, the way I want to be known for in all places and in all time. Yeah, for all generations,
they just
you know.
That part right over. That doesn't exist.
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, we're going to read a paragraph as to how to, you know, boil an egg. And I say, well, you put water in a pan. And then we stop right
and
there.
You stop.
Forget to turn it on. You forget to put the egg in it and all the rest, you know. And so I have had actual discussions with people that are stuck on, I am who I am. And I'll bet everybody in the chat room has too. And they're like an autistic child. You know, they're like a broken record that never stops. And they keep saying, no, you're a liar. You don't know what you're talking about. Because there is really a group of people out there that actually think for some reason they have to know a secret. Well, Yahweh's words, you know, and the way he puts them out there in extant form, he doesn't put them out there in some secretive way. When he shares his name 7,000 times, that kind of makes the guy standing over here saying, I am who I am. You know, I am, I exist.
The thing he said one time.
Yeah, the thing he said one time, yeah. It kind of makes the guy look like a horse's ass and a maniac, and he really is. You know, he really is, because now reason he's got to have a secret that nobody else has. Hey, it is tough enough, Diane, for us to get on this narrow path that few people find, you know, like as an example. You know, I mean, really, think about how narrow this path is. You know, we're not geniuses here. I'm not, you know.
Either.
JB's the only genius I know in this group.
I ain't no genius.
Yeah, well, you know, that's it. That's all we got. So you better be. You know, the point being that, you know, first of all, you got how many people even know there's a God? Okay, maybe everybody knows there's a God somewhere deep in their head, but most people are agnostic. You know, my father claimed to, my dad here on earth claimed to be an atheist. And I believe he was, right to the end. You know, he said, I'm just going to die. That's the end of me. I'm done.
Hey,
and I
right.
said, yeah, you're right. Oh, yeah, I told him he was right. I told him. I said, you're right. And he said, I've heard about you. He said, then I just want you to know, son, there's not going to be any deathbed confessions. And I said, don't worry about that, because trust me, they don't work. You know, it's a pointless endeavor, you know.
Yeah,
you know, but,
I can understand. Just trying to read stuff, and sometimes I get just really, it's easy to just, I don't want to say get off track, but there's, you know, if you're looking and you're trying to establish that relationship with Yahweh, you know, it takes you a lot of places. I know you've been a lot of places, and I appreciate all the places, and I appreciate different information from different people, because sometimes you're at a place where maybe some information that you are hearing now might resonate where it didn't 6 months ago or 2 years ago, you know, so I have, I don't know, at some point in my journey here in the last couple of years, I've just gotten like really, really angry for some reason. And it's like, man, I don't want to be angry. And those people get to do whatever they want to do. You know, they get to think however they want. They get to believe however they want. And you can't almost debate with them, because you end up just making your, for me.
Is that ruining your own day, you mean?
It does.
Right.
Yeah, ruining my
own day. Yeah, it's hardly worth your time to debate. I don't debate it. I tell them to go to hell. That's what I tell them. Go to hell. I don't care. It doesn't mean anything to me. It doesn't bother you. It doesn't bother me. And it doesn't bother me. They can go do whatever they want to do. But it's just, I mean, just think about this path. We've got, what, 7 billion people on the planet? Is that about right? 7.5, maybe?
That's
then
right
we
here.
Get down into, maybe we get it down into a billion people or 1.5 billion people that have access to, you know, that honestly are in societies that have access to corrupted versions of Yahweh's words. Okay? So now we got them, and then we've got a certain percentage of them that say I could care less, and then we got a certain percentage of them that say I'm really going to go for it. Then that percentage of them, they have to get down to where they understand that their book, named after the sun goddess Biblios, is in no way accurate. In fact, it's intentionally misleading, right? They destroy Yahweh's nature, his character, what he's about, what he's offering. Let me ask you something. How would you even know what Yahweh is offering, say, by attending a church or even a synagogue? How would you know?
Yeah, you wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't. How are you gonna say I'm gonna take on the chuka when you don't even know what the chuka is? Right? I mean, now we're down into an extremely small percentage of people. Now, what I've found is, you know, once you get to that level where people find out that there's corruption, then you've got a whole bunch of offshoots. You've got the Hebrew Roots Movement, right? Then you got the Black Hebrew Roots Movement, which isn't, you know, they're just a religious group. You got the Messianics, another religious group. And apparently the Hebrew Roots Movement is also another religious group. How much religion is Yahweh going to allow into the covenant, Diane?
Yeah, hopefully none.
Well, not hopefully. He says anybody that performs any of these acts are not going to be around anymore. You know, I mean, that's a big zero. That's like how much of the bubonic plague are you going to allow into your house? You know, none. And after all, he can actually do it. If his word counts, you know. So when he says none, he means none. So there's not going to be any religion. So then you got to separate out the religion. Then you get a certain amount of people that, and I think it's the larger percentage, by the way, they learn the name, usually in a more corrupted form, like they'll spell, instead of using a wah, they'll use a U, which is fine. You know, I'm not going to attack somebody for saying Yahweh or Yahuwah or something like that because, you know, I'm really not, but I think it's Yah-oh-ah. I'm pretty sure it is. If we were to use, you know, the same grammatical points as we would in any other language, I think it's Yah-oh-ah. But let's say they learn the name. And after they learn the name, all they do is they take the name and then they roll with it and they kind of develop a branch of rabbinic Judaism around it, where they're still on their knees praying. You know, I haven't prayed in years. I don't do that. I've asked Yahweh for things from here from time to time.
On a daily basis, I talk to him.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm not on my knees.
That's not religious veneration, and it's not what you taught. Was prayer. And then you get people that find out, amen.
And have a conversation with him.
Right. Right, and when you teach them, you show them that amen was thrown into the words in what, about the second or third century, and it was thrown in.
The Hebrew word is there, but it's translated or transliterated into amen rather than being translated as truly and surely, which is what it means.
Yeah, but well, that which is just. Trustworthy and verifiable, but it wasn't pronounced Amen. It was Omein.
No, Omein. Yeah, it's a misprint, but it's a word. It should have been translated to begin with. It's like baptism.
Right, it was.
There's no religious concept
it was,
of baptism
it means,
only because it was transliterated instead of translated.
Yeah, but when they put it in the parchments, or the papyrus, I should say, when they put it in the papyrus, the way that they did that was that they... And we know how they did it. They did it as a placeholder. And all placeholders, because there were seven sets of placeholders, you know, Father, Son, Ruach Kodesh, and the upright one, as we're speaking of here. And it literally was upright one. You know, they threw all seven of those placeholders out, and they replaced Yahweh with Lord, Yahusha with Hesus, the Druid Savior, and the Ruach, the Kodesh, Ruach Kodesh with Holy, coming from Helios, the sun god, in my opinion. And then they took Yahweh, of course, became Lord, which was Baal's moniker. And they took the upright one and they replaced it with the oldest satanic symbol in the world, which was the cross. But after they threw all these placeholders out, they added a placeholder. And a placeholder was not for a noun or a word or any other thing. It was either for a title or a name. And the only name it can, Amen, can be associated with is Amen-Ra.
Oh.
But my point is, you know, you show somebody that, and you can. I have a note that shows people exactly that. You know, you show it to them, and then at the end of everything, they start writing, "Oh, Maine." Yeah. So okay, now you're going to turn this word, which means that which is trustworthy and verifiable. What's the other word you use there? James, the other definitions for Omen?
Trustworthy,
they basically
reliable.
Mean the same thing.
Yeah,
right.
All along that same context. I mean,
yeah,
truly,
that which is true, you know,
yes.
That can be
yes.
counted on, you know. Yeah, and they put that at the end of every sentence, you know.
Mm-hmm. I listen
so
to this,
so what they're doing is dragging religious tradition along with them.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the things that are probably the hardest to get rid of. That's why I say the biggest fight we ever have is just trying to get people used to the idea that Yahweh is not a religious deity.
It's one of the hardest things in the world
deity.
To do is separate God from religion, because we are so ingrained, especially in our society, to view religion and God as one.
Oh, not just our society. That's a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's because of religions, the most prevalent organizations in the world.
Yeah, so now we're down to people, how can you separate religion from Yahweh? Okay, now we're down to a pretty small percentage of people. And the people that get that far, that know his name and know he's not a religious deity, they've learned the path by learning that much along the way. You know, they know the path is Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you got a certain percentage of those people that want to obey Yahweh. And I'm sorry, yeah, there's certain things I'm going to keep, like I'm going to set aside as an example, you know, the called out days or the Shabbat, the seventh day of rest. But I want to also understand it because, you know, all this that we've been studying here, right, with Dode's writings, he was more about understanding than he was about doing, wasn't he?
Much more.
I mean, that's what it was about. So the seventh day of rest is what? Well, we know what it is. It foreshadows Sukkah, when we're going to spend time for real with Yahweh. And we're respecting that. We're saying, you know, we want that day to come. And it's, you know, and I'm going to read some Torah, and I'm going to spend some time with Yahweh on Shabbat. But it isn't going to be some kind of religious day for me. Not in any way, shape, or form, because I'm not a religious guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And so now what are we down to in terms of percentages? I think that when you get to that point, you're down into terms of, and you know, this isn't directed at me. This is directed at anybody in the chat room. As far as I'm concerned, or any regular listeners to this show or people that are really involved in Yahweh's words and his nature, you're down to one in a million.
I think that if people are listening to the show more, I mean, and even if they're just listening and they keep tuning in, they're really trying to derive something out of the information. And sometimes it takes, I mean, this is sometimes is really a contortion of our brain. To have to, you know, leave what religion, because it's not that they really think that they're religious. They just, they connect God with religion. And so
yeah, but that has to be, you know, Yahweh's in no way religious. I mean, he hates religion. He rails against religion, but he's not a religious deity.
But that has been just drilled into the whole world's head. And they just—it's hard for them to just drop that. I mean, I've had
exactly.
with that,
I know, I struggled with that. Coming from an agnostic point of view, I had dismissed God because of all the religious stupidity. And, yeah, the idea that God could exist without a religion never occurred to me. I didn't even think about it until, I read through, I was reading through Yada Yada, and Craig started talking about that. I'm like, well, this makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one nice thing about with, Yahweh's Torah and his truth is that things resonate, when a truth will resonate. And sometimes you'll just grasp it for that second, and sometimes you just have to, it's like I do my brain like this, it's like a computer, and I have RAM. And so, I read a lot of stuff, because I just love learning about Yahweh. I mean, there's so much to having a relationship with him, just besides the Mikra. I mean, his personality and everything. So I read lots of stuff. Sometimes stick it back there in RAM, and then I have to do a memory dump every so often because, that was just stupid, and that meant nothing. And then you just kind of build on what keeps resonating, what keeps coming back and coming back.
You also have all kinds of other groups, too. There was a group that, we had, there's about 100 of us, in Unpopular Truth on FB at any given time.
I think it's going to go there.
What's that?
Anyway, go ahead. I said I've been wanting to go there. I'm just afraid to get on Facebook, but go ahead.
Well, if you're on FB, I can add you any time. I mean, it's no problem at all. But I got to tell you, there was a group that got in there and they were into veganism. And they build their whole concept on when Yahweh said the plants of the earth are yours for food. And they're like, what made him change his mind? So, from that point on, when he made the animal skin for Jawa and Adam to wear, because they the Ruach was no longer covering them. Or when he sat down and he ate meat, he had veal or maybe lamb. I bet it was probably lamb with Abraham.
Yahweh told him on the Passover to slaughter the lamb and consume it.
It's only case after hundreds of. It's another one of these. They want to take it out of context. And I asked one of them one time. I said, and the way it's written is all of the plants of the earth are there, for you to eat. Oh, I said, okay. So why don't you go eat poisonous mushrooms? Why don't maybe?
Well,
poison
the thing
oak,
is,
eat
he
it.
Didn't say only the plants of the earth.
No, he didn't.
The plants are here for us to eat, and I love me some spinach. But at the same time, I like that spinach on the side with my a salad with my steak.
You go get a Popeye. I'm telling you, me too. I want my steak too, and I want the lamb too, by the way. And then we've got shrooms, as Steve points out. There are people that eat shrooms, a little different type of mushroom. But on and on it goes. There's that group, and then there's another group that instead of realizing that the seventh day of rest is not Moed, they go up and they try to make where the signs and the symbols for the Moed, and that's literally what he writes, Moed, were created. They make that for the Shabbat, so they have a lunar Shabbat. There's a whole group now based on that.
I did a whole show on that.
it's laughable.
That is just so easy to disprove.
Yeah.
So that goes back to you were saying earlier, people wanting to find this, secret understanding.
Secret.
And, there are, I'll say this, there are deeper understandings to what Yah wrote. I've come, I can read the words, come to understand what they say, go back a year later and come to a deeper understanding. That doesn't negate my original understanding. It just adds to it. It's not a secret. It's just a, I hadn't thought about it in this way, and, it enhances my understanding. There's that.
It's not
secret. It's the plain words.
Well, and Cherie just pointed out in the chat room, the obey groups, they're going out and they obey the law. They're still obeying, they follow the whole rabbinic idea that Torah is law. Well,
Diane,
you said something about freedom. Go ahead.
was going to say, when you're in school, you get your homework and there's instructions at the top. Now, would you ever say I obeyed the instructions? No, I followed the instructions. And that's what Yah Shore is. It's instructions. You can follow it and follow the instructions, and it will benefit you and you will gain from it. But you don't obey it. You don't obey instructions.
Well, you know, when you were talking about the, I didn't know there was a group called the vegan whatever. But
oh, the vegans, they don't believe in eating meat. Yeah, I'd say vegan group. And I think they're strictly vegetarians, but they may be vegans as well. They may not even eat drink milk. You know, I don't know.
Well,
probably not.
When you're talking about them, and so when I did read, and it's like I came to that point myself, and I didn't even know a group existed like that, but in all the beneficial instruction, when he said he gave us the vegetation, and I wouldn't go out and eat poison and stuff like that, but I was listening to Craig the other day, when he was talking on the radio, and he went to break, but his conversation came through the phone. I don't know if you guys heard it or not. And he was talking about Subway sandwiches and how many calories.
Yeah, made a bunch of people hungry. Yeah.
Well, it was so funny because I was listening. I know he's on this diet and stuff. And I was like, wow, you know, y'all also gave us instruction in our food. And because one of the first right off the bat, he says that, I don't know, they ate the forbidden fruit. You know, and they go to the knowledge and stuff, and I understand all that. But when he says that I give you all the vegetation of the earth and everything that produces a seed for your food, and I was thinking about whenever anybody goes on to a diet and whenever they're showing the food to eat for a diet, they never show a cow or a chicken or any of that stuff. They show vegetables, fruit and vegetables, and it's like there are so
well,
much.
Well, I don't know. I trained bodybuilders for years, and I got to tell you, and I took two women and two men to the Nationals, and they ate a lot of beef and a lot of chicken and a lot of fish.
Yeah. Well, I was just in reference to what, you know, what was the food that was given to us originally when he first put us here, because they didn't.
It wasn't just plants. It was everything. It wasn't plants. It was everything.
I thought the meat didn't come in until after the flood or something.
No. No, I mean, come on. He even directs you. He never directs you to eat any. Well, he directs you to eat herbs, a bitter herb, but he directs you to eat lamb.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you know, you're actually directed to do it.
And we're never told that Adam and Chala didn't eat meat in the garden. It never says that at all.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just saying that I went that way.
The point is they pull people off the path because they turn into a religion of vegetarianism, and they're in direct opposition to the Torah. They're in the direct opposition to the Torah. Just like the people that are going to do a lunar Shabbat. You know, look, it's as simple as this. He said, work 6 days, and then the seventh day, you know, reflect on the time you're going to spend with me. And I know what that is. We're reflecting on Sukkah. You know, from Yahweh's point of view, he's still on day six, right?
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't had a seventh day yet. The seventh day is the promise of the seventh day. That's when he will literally rest with his family. Because if you look at it from, you know, the point of relativity, it's still day six, Yahweh's time, from his perspective at the inception of the universe. The seventh day, he's going to spend with his family. So that's what he's looking forward to, and that's what we're supposed to respect and not treat with contempt. Yeah, so that's what we're doing on the seventh day. Now, imagine, and since it's on a 6 days you work, seventh day off, 6 days you work, 7 day off. Now, imagine taking 29 and a half days, because that's based, I think it's 29.5 in some change, but it's 29 and a half days. That's a lunar cycle. You can't divide 7 into 29 and a half equally. You know? So anybody pushing the lunar Shabbat, they're off Torah, aren't they?
Yeah,
it's impossible to justify
so they're lost.
It.
But they needed a secret. See, everybody needs a secret. And Yahweh's words are real direct. They're out front. Well, all we have to do is dig for the truth and want to love the truth, and we'll get to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to the truth. And I think it's just like James says. You know, there's so much to know in the Torah. You know, when he talks about on Shabuah that he's going to enrich us to the 10th power, isn't that what he says? Times 10?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't mean 10 times stronger. He means to the 10th power. You know, you'll become a being of light, right? So you're going to go from a three-dimensional object to perhaps a seven-dimensional object or at least a four-dimensional object. Yeah, and that's the jump between, you know, look at a piece of paper in front of you right now at your computer, okay? Look at that piece of paper. That's a two-dimensional object. Now, picture that paper and then picture yourself. You know, that you're in a whole other realm being three-dimensional. You know what I'm saying here?
There's a really great book for people who want to kind of get a grasp on that idea. It's called Flatland. And it describes a two-dimensional world, and this person from a two-dimensional world visits a one-dimensional world and then visits a three-dimensional world. And just the way that their understanding of it, just a really interesting read. It's only like maybe an 80-page book or so, real short, but a great read for...
Flatland?
Flatland. The real idea of how dimensions work and, you know, the idea that like when a three-dimensional being enters a two-dimensional world, you still only see two dimensions of that being. So like a sphere entering a two-dimensional world would look like a circle that was able to grow and shrink depending on how far in or out of that world it is. The same would be true with like Yahweh. When he enters our world, he becomes a three-dimensional being. And so all we are able to witness of him are the three dimensions that we exist in.
What are we, two-dimensional? Are we two-dimensional now?
We're three-dimensional.
We're three-dimensional now.
This is a three-dimensional.
Yahweh is multiple dimensions above us.
Yeah, but imagine
when
you
our
become...
world, all we saw were the three dimensions.
Sometimes I've thought about that, and it's like having a forest, and you see a row of trees, and then a row of trees behind them, and a row of trees behind them, and a row of trees, and so then you can see through all those trees, and like by the 10th tree back in there would be like the 10th dimension. I mean, stupidly thinking, you know what I'm saying, is just because the first dimension would be the first row of trees that you would just flat see. Then when you see trees behind those trees would be dimension. That's how I can see that.
Well, those dimensions are all still three-dimensional, you know, but the point being here is that if you imagine going from a piece of paper to a human, the jump into the next realm, should we make it, is the same. It's that big of a difference. And the reason I brought that up was because of the Torah. You talk about reading the Torah. One of the things that Lisa B. had brought up, she pulled out this, I guess there's 96 elements that make up the entire universe. And if you take a couple of passages, the passages where Yahweh was talking about the creation of the universe, and you take the first letters in each of those, they represent all 96 elements that create the entire universe we're in.
Isn't he smart? Yahweh is so smart. Every time you do.
Well, no, the point is, our understanding of what all's in the Torah, we're seeing maybe some pretty direct stuff. We're observing it. And I see where Yad is coming from, because I really thought in terms, you know, Yad is pretty good. I'm fair. James is very good. You know, when we talk about our understandings of the Torah, most people in the chat room are you know, realms ahead of other people. But if you look at our understanding of the Torah, and Yad said his might be about a billionth. And then he said, well, you know, maybe I'm overstating the case. And I said, yeah, maybe it's, you know, more like a millionth. He goes, no, I mean, he says, I'm being kind in a billionth. Then I started thinking of all those things. And, yeah, that's right. our understanding of the Torah, because it's absolutely everything. It's even the creation of the universe. It's everything that has happened and everything that will happen. Everything. And it's all written in this book. No, I mean, just try to wrap your mind around that. No, we can't fathom it now, because when we're enriched and empowered, which is what, you know, happens to us when we show up on Shavuot, that's going to give us enrichment, empowerment. And, you know, from Yahweh's perspective, and when he's talking to us, and when he's decided to watch, I've had people tell me, well, I feel like he was watching over me, you know, before I knew him. And, you know, I can see why that would be, as an example, because from his perspective, he knows the beginning and the end, and what's happening now, it's all at the same time, because he exists outside the realm of time. So he sees the future, the present, and the past. I mean, that's special relativity. That's why I said I am. I exist. If you exist outside the realm of time, and that's what he was saying, then, you know, you've already seen the future. And let's say, Diane, that he's already spent years and years and years with you. You know, he does know you personally. Or he does know somebody that didn't think they knew him. He knew them before they knew who he was. Right?
Yes, I've heard that one. I can't...
Well, no, it would have to be. I mean, it would have to be.
I'm having such a hard time with the that he isn't involved in everybody's life personally, but
oh, he's not.
Then he looks after us, that he watches. At some point in the relationship, you have to have something personal in that relationship. That, like you guys say, you talk to him all the time. You don't pray to him, but you have conversations with him like I do every day, all day long, it seems like. You know, and so how do you – what – it's religion that says that makes you want to say that you that he is involved in your life, because you have personal conversation. That if you you know what I'm saying, how they think in religion, but how do you?
Well, mostly they talk at him. Well, mostly they just talk at him. You know, I rarely talk to Yahweh. I mostly listen. You know, that's what I tell you. I mostly listen because, you know, I don't really have anything that important to say. You know,
well, your listening comes through the information that you've accumulated. Would you say that's how you listen? Is because
well, that's
of what
he
you...
calls them, his words. He never called them a Bible or even scripture. He said these are my words. Yeah, I listen through.
So when you're...
I mean, he says right here in Hosea. I mean, let's just. He says this, they have set up rulers and kings, but not by me. They appointed governors and put leaders in positions of authority whom I did not know. Now, it's hard to imagine not knowing somebody that you know. So he wasn't with them. He didn't know them. They set up people. And, of course, that goes now. There's another group. Let's go to this other group. Now we've got this other group. They know Yahweh's name, and they say they've shook off religion, and they got to hang on to Paul, right?
Yeah.
Now, Paul says that all the magistrates everywhere, all the government systems that are in place were put there by Yahweh. Now, Yahweh says that's not the case at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we got Paul in direct conflict with Yahweh, and they'll say, oh, you're misunderstanding Paul. Or you're misunderstanding Yahweh. I'm not misunderstanding anything. I'm looking at the words, and that's what they say. You know, and they're
right,
unable
I'm happy if you can prove me wrong. Yahweh says that a male who is not circumcised has negated his covenant. Paul says that if you're circumcised, you benefit nothing from Yahusha. Who am I misinterpreting here? That's what the words clearly say, and they're opposite.
No, he clearly says that he wishes all under the Torah were castrated. Castrated. That's the term he used in P46. It's the oldest writings of Paulos on the planet. nothing older anywhere. Yeah. So those are extant words of his own.
Yeah, I believe he said that this afternoon on today's show was about the governments being set up, because Paul does say that, and I didn't really catch that till today, because you said that this morning on today's show. So thank you for that.
Oh yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, that's just one example. But then, you know, Yahweh goes further than that. He says, you know, my people destroyed for lack of knowledge, because you have rejected knowledge, I'll reject you from being spokesman for me, and because you have forgotten the Torah of your Elohim, I'll forget your children. Now, imagine that. It's pretty hard to forget somebody you're around 24 hours a day. You know, and it's kind of weird, too, because the religious notion, you know, imagine, you know, here's a serial killer. I mean, I use this a lot, but, you know, I mean, some brutish monster, and he's raping and murdering women and children. You know, there are people out there like that. Do you think Yahweh's standing outside their door or presenting his door in front of them saying, please knock and come in. I really want to get to know you. Think of how stupid that is. You know, is Yahweh, has he gone full retard, you know? Of course not. You know, there's about a million, billion people I don't want to know. You know, and I've never wanted to know. I don't ever want to know. And I'm sure Yahweh's the same way. I mean, have you ever seen groups of people you just wish you would never be around?
Mm-hmm.
I have.
Many people I wish I hadn't met.
Imagine these, you know, let's go the other route. Imagine these bastards that run these multi-mega churches and sell books, and they write all these crazy stories that, you know, the story of Noah was really God telling us he wants us all to own a yacht. That's what one of them said the other day.
Oh,
I'm not kidding you. It's a quote.
I forget the nut.
Him and his wife run some big mega church. He's one of the more popular ones today. Joel Osteen.
Oh, yeah.
The story of Noah is that Yahweh wants us each to personally own a yacht.
Well, my friend listened to Jesse Duplantis. And, man, I tell you, he was telling everybody exactly what he was doing. He goes, I got a job, and my job is to get money out of your pocket and give to me. And I'm telling
just
my
like
friend,
that, huh?
Yes. And it's like, did you just hear what he said? He's fleecing you. And you're going to keep listening to him. And I'm telling you, I mean, we just really got into a serious argument over it. And I had to leave. It's like, I'm
you mean your friend bought this story?
Yes, but it's like, and he sends him money, and it's like, you are so stupid. I can't believe that you're doing that. But, you know, if you choose to be fleeced, then be fleeced.
What's this guy's name? The guy running this outfit that tells him he's stealing from him? But
Jesse Duplantis is his name. It's like,
man. Jesse Duplantis.
You've
never heard of him?
He's
been
criminal.
To heaven,
no.
Too. Yeah,
I stay away
heaven.
From the religious groups as much as I can. They have nothing to say that I
well,
care to hear ever.
We learned about them when, who was those, Fannie Mae or not, Tammy Faye and whoever, Baker, remember those people?
Tammy Faye.
Yeah, that's from the past.
She actually sold makeup, by the way, which was something I guess, you know, I would have thought it would have been used for Halloween. You know, it seems like I saw whiskers sticking out from underneath of her pancake makeup a couple times. Yeah, I know who she was. A total nut.
Jim and Tammy Faye Baker.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my brother was a preacher there for a while, and man, him and I could not talk. We would just get into it all the time. And so one time he was telling me the story about his church, and he said this lady went up and told the pastor's wife her hair looked nice. And the pastor's wife told her, oh, well, I got it fixed with the money out of the collections. I got another way, so I went to this. And I guess, like, I couldn't believe that she just didn't just say not because she wasn't going to put any more money in the collection again. But so I went to this one church with my friend. I hadn't been into a church for years and years and years. But I went with this one that's going to listen to sending money to these people. It's like, okay, I'll go with you. And so they always pass the basket. Well, I thought, gee, when they were supposed to give the tenth, it was a tenth of the harvest for the poor. So I says, next time, if I ever go again, which I won't, but I'm going to take a loaf of bread and I'm going to put it in the basket. And that's going to be my contribution, is putting a loaf of bread in the basket.
Well, you know, I mean, when you talk about that, you know, you look at, and I've actually heard preachers, I'd heard them in the past, quote, Malachi. They call him Malachi. I guess so, it sounds Italian. It means messenger. And, you know, I'll just
Malachi.
Read this. Yeah. It says, this is from 3:8, and then it goes into 3:9 and 3:10. It says, does God exploit and rob man? But indeed, you all exploit and rob according to me. But you ask, in what way do we exploit you by force or deception? And Yahweh says, your perspective is based upon appearance, but you actually extort, and that's Kaaba, all of his people. Return with all the tithe to the storeroom so that there will be freshly harvested food in my houses. In other words, what he was saying is, you need to take back to the storeroom what you've stolen. It was designed to feed my family. It wasn't designed there to enrich you. And, you know, Yahweh says, without money or cost, he says, listen to me carefully. Incline your ear. Come to me. Listen so that you may live, and so that you will be able to establish an everlasting covenant relationship, you know, with you, so that I will be able to. And that's Yashayu 55:3. There is no money or cost involved. And there's a masal, there's a verse that talks about one time a year in the abundance of your harvest. You know, he's really talking about giving to the poor. And the way they write it in the Bible, they make it sound like you're supposed to be doing this every week. They do everything they can to enrich themselves and to keep their coffers filled at the circus. But, you know, none of these are based on Yahweh's words. I mean, even the lowly weren't supposed to be abusing. And if anybody was put in a position to do anything, it was the lowly, but they were abusing the tithe. It wasn't theirs. It wasn't theirs to use.
Well, they were given a portion of food. Yeah, because the lowly were not given any land. So they didn't have land to grow crops or raise animals.
Again.
Yeah, no. No,
right.
But the people contributed to feed them because they weren't given land like the other tribes. That was the entire purpose of it, was, you know, these people are set aside for maintaining my house. That is all they're going to do. You guys have this land to farm and raise animals. Give them this much food so that they can live. Simple.
Yeah, that much. But yet they took more and they said, well, this is ours. This is ours.
Yeah.
They started looking at the storehouse as their personal fiefdom, which is exactly how a preacher or a priest looks at it today. Here's the Masal I was thinking of, and it's Proverbs 39, or the word picture 39, and here's what it says. You should choose to honor and show your respect for Yahweh by means of your abundance and from that which is really available and easy, and from the first fruit of all your harvest. So the first fruit of the harvest, you know, that's the only time that you would really show, you know, from the abundance of that harvest, and that which is readily available and easy. You know, you might pick up, a ton, and you give a couple of pounds to the storehouse there. But now, what does a King James Version read? It reads like this. It doesn't say you should choose to honor and show your respect for Yahweh by means of your abundance from that which is readily available and easy and from the first fruit of all your harvest. There's first fruits, what, once a year. Isn't that right? You get first fruits once a year. King James Version reads, honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. As if, You know what I mean?
Oh, the religious side.
Every time you make a buck, you better give us some of it, huh?
I've actually heard a religious pastor use that verse to argue what God is saying is you should contribute to the church not based on your after-tax, you know, your net, but based on your gross. Based on your debt, not on your gross. Yeah, don't.
Well, I don't know how he could get that. I don't see the IRS involved in this.
Paid 10% before your tax.
Well, I just don't see the IRS involved.
Yeah,
and since I'm not a farmer, it's hard for me to give of a harvest. And who would I give it to? Wasn't the storehouse destroyed?
But I'm pretty sure the local squirrel has taken most of the harvest from those two pecan trees this year.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, today Yahweh's house and his storehouse don't exist. Yahweh's house nor his storehouse exists because the temple and the storehouse were destroyed. That was done in 70 CE. You know, most of us don't work the land. We don't grow crops or herd sheep. We don't live in the promised land. And even if we did, Israel was salted by the Romans in 135 CE as a result of the wannabe
Akiba.
Messiah, Simon Bar Kokhba revolution. So, you know, just like much of the Torah, you know, we can't donate 10% of the food we produce to his storehouse because storehouse doesn't exist. So we can observe the Torah, and we can understand what he's saying. And, you know, by really understanding what he's saying there, that would eliminate paid clergy right there, wouldn't it? I mean, by observing the Torah, you couldn't. It'd be like going up and giving heroin to a thieving heroin addict in hopes of solving his problem, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Or opening up a casino next to a guy that was addicted to gambling. So when you go in and you give money at the circus, you're actually, I guess that would be a sin, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, stupid, for sure.
Well, it'd be a sin. The biggest sin Yahweh talks about is being involved with religion. I mean, who's the whore? Right?
Yeah.
The religious, right? He calls them spiritual whores, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So why would
yeah.
we attach ourselves in any way, shape, or form? I can't stand to be around religious people. You know, one of the things I've found being on FB is that, and I'm sure most of the people in the chat room are going to agree, or most of the people listening, you know, you start putting out Yahweh's words and notes, and next thing you know, you got a bunch of religious people friending you. With names like Holy, and you know, the Holy Spirit is me, and you know, they got the weirdest, craziest names. You know, they got all these religious names. I mean, I would much prefer to be around a bunch of people that never spoke anything about religion than religious people. Religious people are the worst people in the world. They kill their own kids. They teach, they damn their own kids. I mean, they separate their own kids from Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most serial killers won't kill their own families, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
But a religious person will. And the only way that counts, spiritually. They make sure they're spiritually dead. The entire world system is set up that way. Right?
Well, that's the point of the adversary is to, I don't know, keep you from Yahweh, so.
Yeah, well, religious people are the worst people on the planet, I think. The political, the religious, the militaristic. But I think of all of them, I think the worst is the religious.
Mm-hmm.
They're the most, they're just despicable people.
I think they're all just different names for the same thing. Yeah, you take most people who are religious, or you compare it to most people who are political. Yeah, my dad calls himself a Christian, but his religion is Republican politics. Yeah, he has the religious devotion
true.
To it
sure.
that the religious have to their religion. And the same is true for the military people. You know, people worship the military, that's their religion. They may go to church occasionally on Sunday, but their religion is the military. Yeah, their religion is Republican or Democrat, left-right politics. Yeah, they're all the same thing. It's just different names for it.
Oh, yeah, that was my religion. You know, my religion was, yeah, I called myself a Christian, but I was a flag-waving Republican.
That was me. If I, the closest thing I ever had to religion was, and I wasn't so much Republican, I was conservative, but I bought into the, you know, we have to vote for the, you know, lesser of two evils bull crap. And
yeah, which means you're voting for evil, doesn't it?
Fortunately, I was. I can honestly say I'm, you know, fortunate in this. I can say I did not vote for George Bush. I voted Libertarian in both elections that I voted in after I became of age to vote.
No, I think
that's any better, but at least I didn't vote for Bush.
But I think I'm going to put my sign out like your South Park example this afternoon.
That was a great episode. It is just so perfect.
That's about the answer, isn't it? I mean, they all work for the same people. I mean, that is really the ideas of keeping the conversation sterile in the world. You know, you don't bring up, what are the two things in polite company you never bring up? Well, you never bring up religion and you never bring up politics. The reason that you don't do that is because there's no moderator, you know, and somebody might really get to the truth that way. You know, again, if I said to somebody, you know, if you don't believe there's a religious deity that created the universe, well, you're in step with Yahweh's words, because that's exactly what he says. You know, that's thrown for a loop. Because they've been taught that Yahweh's perception of people is that they should, you know, get on their face in submission and pray to him and religious veneration all going on around him. And, you know, Diane, did you ever ask any of the religious people that you know, did you ever ask them what they're going to do in eternity? I know what they're going to do in eternity. Their consciousness will not exist, but they think it will. So ask them, what are they going to do? Are they going to sit around on their knees crying and begging and pleading and singing praises to the Lord that
they're
afraid of?
They're going to worship the Lord for all eternity. Really?
I think
that sounds like a horrible eternity to me. That literally sounds worse than your description of hell. I would rather be, in your description of hell, being on fire and poked and prodded than spend an eternity bowing and worshiping. They both sound horrible to me, but if I have to choose, lake of fire it is.
I'm glad I don't have to make that choice. Go ahead, Diane. What were you saying there? What, I mean, do you ever ask them? What do they tell you?
Well, they don't. I think they think they're just going to float around on clouds. I don't think they have any idea.
Float around on a cloud. Boy, that'd get a little old.
Well, they don't have any idea what they're going to do. They don't. They really have no idea what is beyond. They're just waiting to get somewhere and have no idea what they're going to do when they get there.
They're just, okay, so. I think most of them I knew, they were going to be praising Yahweh forever, but they don't use, they're going to be singing to the Lord and praying, and it sounds like a real religious existence is what it sounds. It sounds awful.
I'll tell you right now, God does not want me singing to him for all eternity. I guarantee you, after about 10 seconds, he's going to be like, okay, enough.
I'll own that one.
Up.
Yeah.
Well, I thought he has like myriads upon myriads of messengers, so he doesn't need, I always thought whenever they say that, well, he already has somebody to do those things, so what does he need you to do those things for him for? Because his messengers, I mean, he has myriads upon myriads of what do they call them?
Sure, he needs more.
Yeah.
It requires more and more. He doesn't have enough.
It requires
He's that humanity. Insecure, he needs more.
Yeah.
Well, I just don't get it. I mean, the nature of the Christian deity, and by the way, even worse, the Islamic deity, is that they need somebody in submission on their knees, practicing religious veneration. And you know, I once had a Christian tell me, "Let me tell you, I know how to be forgive. I know how to get on my face. Get on my face." Wow.
I know how to do that, too. I just have no desire to. You know, it's not hard.
A dog on
get
the
down,
floor.
Get your face on the ground. What's so difficult?
Well, you know, when you talk about how Yahweh wants to have, lifts us up, so, you know, like our children, like you've given examples many times, James, about lifting your children up, and, you know, that is just such a wonderful, loving thing to do. And we do that ourselves, so why do we think that, you know, the creator of the universe wouldn't do that for us?
Well, he says he does.
Yeah.
Over and over and over in his words, I will continually bless you and lift you up. I knelt down and I breathed Nesama into Adam's nose, he says, you know, now into his nostrils. Now, if that being the case, how in the world would bowing down to a being as brilliant and as awesome and as powerful as Yahweh, how would that be helpful? He has to lower himself, I mean, to deal with us, doesn't he? I mean, really. He has to diminish himself in order to come into this realm. He did it every time he came into this realm. You know, anytime when he spoke with Moses, when he spoke with Adam and Shawa, when he, you know, all these things, he had to diminish himself. He had to lower himself. And he doesn't lower himself to be low in front of us. We should have the utmost respect and admiration that he did do that. You know, I mean, that in and of itself is awesome. You know, he's awesome in that way. But he certainly... you know, if we're bowing down to Yahweh, what we're doing is saying you're like Stalin, or you're like Pol Pot, or you're like Mao, or you're like the New World Order. You know, you're a part of that crew, and that trashes his character. So it's pretty obvious to me that any time that we have religion involved or religious notions involved in Yahweh, what we really have is Satan, because we're putting Satan's nature onto Yahweh, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're doing the opposite of what Yahweh would do. He said, I will of my own volition consistently kneel down in love, lowering myself to bless and benefit you. That's right there in Bereshith 12:2. I mean, that tells us a lot about his character. And, you know, when we look at, you know, Abraham, when he was first Abram, which means father who lifts up, before he was renamed Abraham, he said, then Abraham fell on his face, and God spoke with him and to say, here I am, look up at me. This is my familial covenant relationship. It's with you, and you shall be a father of many different races and places. And the reason he told him to look up is because he fell to his face in prostration, and that's not what Yahweh wanted.
No.
You know, I'll choose to kneel down and bless, and he's talking about Sarah through her, and also I will literally give you a son from her. Now, the only other time Abraham fell down on his face was at that time, and he fell on his face laughing and muttering under his breath, you know, why is he giving a child to some guy that's 100 through a daughter that's 90 years old? You know, right?
Oh, yeah,
and Sarah was laughing at him, too. You know,
well,
Sarah was laughing at him,
true,
too.
But
you know, it's
after.
Hard to imagine. Go ahead.
How much longer after he had Isaac did he, because they always say, and then he begat, and then he lived so many years afterwards, and then whatever, and he begat sons and daughters, whatever. Does it say how long after that? Because it wasn't unusual for, I understand the point that you're saying about being 100, that he was laughing at that. I just didn't know if they had diminished their life down to just 100 or 150 years from 900 years at that point. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah. Abraham was after Noah, so yeah, they were down into 120 years.
Okay.
Their 120-year life expectancies at that point is what they were. and it was 120, never even said 100, but a generation was 100 years. And the name, of course, wasn't Isaac, it was Yitzhak, and it means laughter. And the reason was, I mean, I'll read it right here. And then Abraham fell upon his face, and he laughed, saying to himself, what's the point of a purpose and purpose of a son being born to a 100-year-old? And what of Sarah? How is a 90-year-old daughter going to conceive and bear a child? And, you know, so Yahweh, who incidentally is God, and that's the creator of the universe, and the architect of all life, made a prophetic promise to Abraham, and what did Abraham do? He fell over with laughter. And then the first child was named laughter. That is the covenant.
Yeah,
that's the covenant. There's
Abraham
no religion
lived
there.
To be 175 years old, actually.
Yeah, but that was much longer than anybody else.
According to Rashi, 25:7.
Yeah, but even then, that's much longer than anybody else.
That was in the declining of the age of man.
Yeah.
Or age shrunk. You know, it went down slowly, which makes sense because, you know, it would have been a gradual evolutionary process that caused us to go from 900 years old to our current point. So he was still in that higher point. So, yeah, he lived to be 175.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, even at today's, you know, being 60, and even if you know if you're going to live to be 80 years old, who would want to have to raise a child at 80? Being 80 and have your child be 18 and you're 80. You know, I could see how, I don't know, Sarah would be kind of maybe beside herself myself.
Well, Sarah even smiled, remember? She smiled and looked over at Yahweh and said, "What's this, Yahweh? Miracles?" They're talking to Yahweh, and they're talking about miracles. Remember, they had come out of Babylon, which was the most religious place on the planet. You know, living in Babylon would be similar to living in the Vatican, you know. I mean, it was a very, very religious place. And, of course, they had spiritualism. They had astrology. You know, they worshipped Sin, the moon god. You know, Allah wasn't the first god to ever be worshipped in the form of a crescent moon. The first one was called, literally, his name was Sin. And that was in Babylon. Yeah. And then they had Baal Berith, right? They had the Lord's Covenant, which is Easter, you know, Ishtar. You know, it's just amazing, you know, and then all this stuff gets dragged out, right? It all gets dragged out into today's religions. And then people think...
That's funny, Larry, because when you say that they worship the sin god, and then when you think about people being called sinners, that just... like connects to me because I don't know sinners and you know and they've tagged that all through history as being sinners, which is I don't know, that's one thing I hated about religion the most is that I was a sinner. I'm always a sinner. I'm a sinner, 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 sinner. You know, well, I like the word transgressor better. You know, I have transgressed.
Well, what's the greatest sin that Yahweh talks about? Being involved in religion, right? That's the one he hates the most. The most. That's the one. And it's attaching religious notions to the Creator. You know, because, you know, Yahweh's got to know. He's got to know. I mean, he definitely knows that religion is what creates atheism.
Well, it creates subjection. Too. And they always, the adversary, the religious leaders want subjection. It isn't just Islamic, all religious, even the people we were talking about tonight. Subjection. No, and people can't see, no matter that you're sending them in your money, you're subjecting to them. So,
well, so it's submission, yeah. I mean, Halal Ben Shakar, as you know, is Satan's real name. And then, you know, what does that mean? Well, Halal Ben Shakar means the arrogant son of the morning rising sun. And then what do we have in all the circuses? Sun worship, right? They worship a lord on Sunday, which is exactly what they did in Babylon, right? And and they have the little sun halos. They've got the cross. That was one of his signs, the pagan cross. That's in all the sun images, whether it's you know, the Roman Chia Rio or the Druid Swastika or the Egyptian Anka. Those are all sun images, right?
So when you talk to religious people, then what you just say to them is that you just have to say, I know, I'm aware that you're a sun worshiper. You know, and that'll
right.
really throw them off because they won't even know what you're talking about. But you know what they are.
Right.
They're
well, I explained to them what Halal's name is and how that was done, you know, the very day that they had Baal Berith. That was done on the Sunday nearest the vernal equinox, and he was worshipped in the form of a bull or a golden calf with the sun between his horns. And on Easter, that's when Taurus the bull is in constellation with the sun.
Yeah. I read something about that. That gets kind of deep for me.
Well, no, I mean, the images are right there. They're still there. I mean, the sun's in constellation with Taurus the bull on Easter Sunday, on Ishtar Sunday. And that's exactly how I was worshipped. It was called Baal Berith, the Lord's Covenant. And to this day, they do the exact same thing. I mean, the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's where we are, where we're at with religion. I mean, so many people think that they're pleasing God somehow by being attached to religion when, you know, the people that are pleasing Yahweh, the ones that are out there fighting against the religious every day and exposing them, which is one of the reasons Yah is such a great guy. You know, he's created a lot of weapons against the religious, and the religious are the people that are going to take this planet to within, oh, I don't know, hours of the extinction of all mankind. Aren't they?
Yep.
I'm nice. You know, I listen to Yada and I listen to the first hour and the second hour, and man, I tell you, it's just politics just goes right. It's really difficult for me to engage in the politics. You do really good on presenting the history and how, I don't know, war started. Even I can't follow him in the politics. It's over my head.
Well, politics
is simple. Republican, Democrat, equal the same.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, they work for the same people.
And all of them equal, you know, less freedom for us.
Absolutely. Well, it's we're past time. It's like 9:08 now, so we're off the air. But it's been a pleasure. I enjoyed it. Nice, relaxing conversation. Hopefully, we help kick the can a little farther down the road for somebody, you know.
Hey, thank you for the conversation today on the Noah's Ark and the cubits and stuff. That was very interesting. I enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Ark is just an amazing thing. Its design equivalent would be equivalent to the most advanced ships today. That's why I always said, you know, I always wonder, why is he giving us these dimensions? Of course, there's always a reason in the Torah. And mm-hmm. the reason was he was showing you, look, in this, I'm going to have a ship with the design specifications of the most advanced ships that you'll ever build.
That will ever be built by man, yeah.
Yeah, ever.
Yeah, like I said, you pointed out, yeah, that is, yeah, what we have today is the most advanced of all time, and it equals what he built. And we know,
right, so
yeah,
I would
based
ask
on our
anybody,
timeline, we have got a lot of time for man to improve upon that.
So why do we have to find an ark?
We don't.
Well, listen,
no,
the ark
that was proof enough.
Be found, isn't it? Looks like when they show it in the diagram, it looks like a little bitty boat. Have you seen those?
It's an engineering marvel is what it is. You know, I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. You know, how could anybody find, and you know, that was penned, what, 3,500 years ago. 3,500 years ago, he talked about relativity. He gave us a design that's equal to our most advanced ships today. How could anyone see that as an accident?
Yeah. Moshe just got lucky. He picked some random numbers out of his head, threw them in there.
Yeah.
He got lucky.
Yeah, they were the equivalent of our most advanced ships. Wow. Yeah, it's just amazing. No, you're welcome. That was taken right out of Yada Yah. I'm sure you know that. So,
I've heard it. It's very good. I always enjoy I wanted to do one on the DNA and the RNA again. I really enjoyed that talk. So maybe in the future, I don't know.
Yeah, I'll tell Yada to do that. He's very good at that. He's real big into science. I'm big into science. You start looking at RNA and DNA, and once you understand it's a language, it's over with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know of any language, that written language, anything actually put down, you know, and three-dimensional language at that, you know, had to be written. Languages don't fall out of, you know, thin air. How could that possibly be?
Yeah, a perfect language is created by happenstance. Yeah, I'm buying that.
Yeah, how weird might that be?
If you believe that, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
Well, in that way, I mean, let's face it. And in that way, the truth of the matter is that a true atheist, say somebody like Stephen Hawking as an example, they have to be more irrational than the religious. The religious are just totally... they've been consciously misled, purposely. But it takes a maniac to believe things like that. You know, science, it doesn't really work the same way that you know, you look at a cell, right? You look at a cell or you look at any life form. You know, let's say I'm breeding dogs. You know, when you go and you breed dogs and you finally get to, say you start with 5 or 10 dogs and you get down to a Chihuahua, okay, or a Sheltie, or whatever. Just say we finally get down to a Sheltie. You know, the fact of the matter is that the way that we bred that dog is we bred information, genetic information, out of the dog until finally we get to a Sheltie. And finally, two Shelties can only do what? They can only have another Sheltie, right?
Yeah.
I mean, two Shelties can't have a St. Bernard. They can't even have a mixed pup. They can only have a Sheltie. And the reason for that is because you bred genetic information out of the animal. So genetic material can only be lost. It cannot be gained. And the very idea of macroevolution is that somehow, magically, genetic material was gained instead of lost. That's impossible. I mean, from a scientific standpoint, that's Mendel's law. That's a law in science. That's just the way it is.
That is funny. Well,
no, I mean, it's just the truth. I mean... but I mean, there's a million things like that we can point out, but the DNA, of course, gets astronomically, ridiculously stupid. I mean, it's just stupid.
Yeah. Well, I love that stuff. I love how you guys present that, and I really enjoy it. So I'm looking forward to some of that, hopefully, before...
Diane, what's your last name? Which Diane is this? I don't know that we've talked.
Well, I've been on Yada before, on Yada Yada before. You
yeah,
know,
I heard you call
funny,
in. What's your last name? Well, you may not want to give it. That's fine.
It's Gusman.
Yasmin?
Jesus and Go.
Okay.
Gusman, yeah.
I got it. Okay.
You know what's funny, Larry, is that a Cindy that writes into Yada all the time, she says, I write to him all the time. I met her off from the website when I was looking for people around in Denver to talk to. And so she was at a fire station here in town. I go visit her all the time, like really nice person. But I met her off from the contacts on Yada Yada forum.
On the forum
site? Pardon?
On the forum site of Yada Yada? Okay.
This is about 2 years ago now. But my neighbor, which is just next door to me, also listens to Yada Yada all the time. So I have really two people that I get to go talk to all the time. They persevere with me. I know, like you guys do, Yada does too. I know he's probably saying, oh no, it's Diane, and I don't know what she got going on in her head now, but I appreciate you guys enduring with me. I'm on just trying to get past the religion and get going on. But I have two other people right here that I just, it's phenomenal. That because there's not very many people that you know that you can actually just walk to their house to and go, hey.
Oh, no, you're way ahead of where I'm at. I've got to drive all the way over to Orlando, you know, to be honest with you, if I want to talk to anybody. There's a couple of people over in Orlando, a couple down in the Daytona area, and then over in Fort Lauderdale. You know, but we got 17 million people in this state, and I think there's, you know,
maybe a dozen.
10 people or so, you know, not many. You know, and there's certainly no groups.
I live in a house with someone I can talk about it with. And then to top that,
well, you're ahead of most of us.
My best friend and my brother, who is my brother-in-law, him and his wife are really coming along. And so we have great conversations with them. Yeah.
Isn't that fun?
They finally left religion, and they're really looking to really try and know Yah's word. So we started a study on Introduction to God with them, and it's great.
Oh, wow. Here's the former atheist. The former atheist, James Bowen, you know.
No, what's great is when
running a Yahweh group.
He was a very hardcore Christian, and I was in the agnostic point of view, and we would have discussions in that regard. And so now it's completely changed in, you know, terms of that. So it's been a great experience.
Isn't that so nice to be able to have somebody to talk to? Because I come to my neighbor down here, and her name's Beth, and it's like, okay, Beth, well, I read this, and what do you think? And she understands better than I do. And it's like, okay, Beth, what's this about? What's that about? And I just am so happy to have somebody to straighten me out, because I think I would... People that are trying to get down the road and they don't have anybody and they just have to depend on the shows and listen to the, you know, archives and stuff to try to, you know, figure it out and get along, it's difficult.
I love the forum, and the forum has, you know, helped me so much throughout the years. And I love being able to get on there and get in the chat room and in the Skype group and talk with people. But it's still not the same as, you know, sitting down with my wife or my friend and, you know, having these conversations in person. There is just an added benefit to that, and I'm very lucky.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing that with FB, the forum I had a hard time with because I had a hard time, you know, you'd, like, ask a question, and it seemed like, you know, it might be a week before somebody answered it. At least the way it used to be set up, there were so many different areas where discussion might be going in. So you go in, you ask a question, and, you know, people have to make a living, so they're out working and this and that. Where on FB, what I found is, you could get a real direct answer. And
yeah, it's more live.
Yeah, it's more of an interactive thing. So I just felt like what I was going to do was just take, you know, and I asked Craig if it'd be okay with him, and he said, yeah, as long as you understand it. That was the only point. I want you to understand the material you lay out there. I said, no problem. So, you know, I just started, you know, making notes out of Yada Yah. That's all. You know, a little ad lib here and there, but not too much, and just kind of putting them out there. And I found the smaller the note, the more people that I got to listen to it. And what I found is that the people that are looking are real receptive to Yahweh's words, for the most part. Now, there aren't a lot of people looking. Most people are comfortable where they're at. You know, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, that's free will. That's what this is all about.
Most people are looking
no free will,
to defend where they're at, not looking to learn new things.
Yeah, they're even looking to defend it. Yeah, it's just that they have no defense. I find... I use Yahweh's words in debates on FB because it's easy for me. I've got hundreds of notes now, so I know exactly whatever area we're in. And so they find they're debating Yahweh's words, and they run real fast. They go, well,
you
know, believe what you
believe.
That's the whole
idea of faith. And, you know, really, that is the thing with people who are people of faith is if there's anyone who disagrees with them, their faith is threatened. So they feel like they have to convince everyone about their faith. Yeah, if you agree with it, you are a threat to their faith.
My sister was listening, you know, to Yada Yah, and Beth and I would, you know, because she reads a lot, and would you say she's religious, Kathy? Yeah. So anyway, she goes, she did tell me, she goes, Diane, I can't listen to you because I can't let go of where I'm at right now. I can't be shaken like that right now. And she's, you know,
she'd rather die.
No,
she's still having
a lot of
problems.
Well, yeah, I don't think that it was that so much as that sometimes, you know, when people are, she had a lot of things going on in her marriage and stuff, and she was really holding on to God because she had, was her refuge. But
she wasn't holding on to God. She was holding on to Satan.
She was.
I know,
but, you know, they don't know
she's
that.
Holding on to God. What's that?
I said, you can't tell them that at that particular time, but she's kind
of
No,
I know, but I'm telling you that, you know, and I tell anybody that. Well, you know, I had a woman I spent almost 6 or 8 months sharing Yahweh's words with. And I showed her where Yahweh said, my family will love my name. My family uses my name. They bless in my name. You know, I want to be called in my name for all generations. I mean, you know, the people that took my name out of my own words, those people are going to be incarcerated, separated for all eternity. I mean, if that's not a big crime, you don't send somebody to the abyss, you know. But he says he's going to. So I showed her all his words, and I showed her where Lord came from, how they took Eden and changed it to Adon to make it Adonijah, my Lord. You know, that comes from Adonis, the sun god, by the way. And you know, all this. I showed her all this, and she agreed. And then religious people were on her page, and she started posting about the Lord again. And I sent her a message, and I said, you're dead. And if you'd rather run with dead whores than listen to Yahweh's words and be a part of his family, good luck. I'm sorry I wasted 8 months of my time.
But you never waste your time. You know, sometimes that just resonates. It'll sit there for a while, and, you know,
I'm not
really
a person knocking at the door hoping that they all come in. I already
know
that. Thousands will be a part of the family, and most of them are just the walking dead.
You're
that
right.
Includes my
but
own
you know, that's
kids,
the advantage
okay?
Of doing
nobody
things
gets a
online.
Break.
When you do it online
nobody
and
gets a
you
break.
Have that discussion, you provide an outlet. You know, even if the person you're talking to isn't reached from it, someone else reading it may be. That's why I
love a lot of this stuff, though, when she was sending me private messages.
Okay, so that was
and, of course, I was taking hours answering these things in private messages. And when somebody sees Yahweh's words, if the creator of the universe came up to you and said, don't ever call me Lord, nobody calling me Lord will be a part of my family. I don't want any religious imagery. None of that should ever be attached to me. In fact, those who remove my name are all going to die for it. I want to be called Yahweh. I want to be welcomed as an individual. Now, if you knew all this and it was shown to you, it's one thing somebody not knowing. But once you show it to somebody, and then out of total lack of regard.
Doing it knowingly.
Oh, yeah, it was knowingly at that point. It was total disrespect. That made her one of Satan's minions.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, I just see her as somebody that carries water for Satan. She is my enemy. Enemy.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something, Diane. I hate her.
I understand that.
I wish her nothing good. I hate people like that. I hate them. Why did they waste my time? You know?
I know. Well, I thought about that term. Love what Yahweh says. Love what I love and hate what I hate. And so I understand
well,
that.
Well, you know what Doug said about those people, don't you? The fence setters. He said, "I hate with a perfect hate." Hate.
And that.
Yahweh's not the emotion called love, and he's not accepting of everybody, and he's not politically correct and inclusive. That's another religion. There you go. There's the other big religion. Well, we can all agree to disagree, and we can all be one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, we can't.
Isn't that social secularism?
Not in this boy's life. You know,
now, there are some things
we
can agree to disagree on. You like chocolate ice cream. I like vanilla. We can agree to disagree.
Yeah, whatever.
It's not important.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know, you like ice cream, and I like them all. You know, I like all flavors of ice cream.
You
want to
be a vegan? I want to eat meat. I have no problem if you want to go be a vegan.
No problem. I got no problem with veggies.
More meat for me.
Exactly. Well, listen, I'm going to go, but yeah, that's one of the things that I'm kind of well known for is just being the guy that says good to hell with you, you know. Damn you and damn your kids too.
Hold on.
You know, because I'm
going
to
enjoy you.
Yeah, well, sometimes I enjoy doing it, you know.
No, I said but, we enjoy you on the show. I really enjoy
I
your
appreciate that.
Bring to the show, and so do and you too, James. And thank you for letting me participate.
Oh, you bet, Diane. I enjoyed it. You didn't say anything out of whack for me there. All right. Well, you guys have a good one. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Good night.
Bye-bye.